Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Hurd.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Max.
On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
It's time to anchor down and listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name's Max Hurd. I'm your host on this Monday, November the 23rd. A little bit later in the day, we're recording because we had a little schedule change. Vanderbilt will not be playing Tennessee this weekend. They will be playing Missouri instead. What started this chain reaction was COVID cases and contact tracing at Arkansas that forced the cancellation or the postponement of the Arkansas-Missouri game. And then the SEC switches opponents. Vanderbilt will play Missouri. As of now, Tennessee is not playing. A little bit of confusion about why that would have happened. Robbie Weinstein from 24/7 Sports, who covers the Commodores and is on the podcast quite a bit, is saying that Tennessee is having separate COVID-19 issues that were not acknowledged by the SEC at this time. Whether or not they acknowledge them later, we're not sure. But it seems like Vanderbilt, Missouri was the game out of that foursome that was the most likely to get in. They still had to play that game. Those two teams were canceled earlier in the year. They were supposed to play on the first makeup weekend of December the 12th. So as of now, it seems like Vanderbilt could play Tennessee later, but the rivalry game will not take place this weekend. Derek Mason was just on the Commodore Hour here on 102.5 The Game. Says that the team found out around 4 o'clock today and that they are hopeful that they can still play that Tennessee game, which is their final home game and senior day, later on in the season, which would mean sometime in the next 4 Saturdays. So it'll be Vanderbilt and Missouri taking Arkansas and Missouri's time slot that Saturday at 11 a.m. It'll be on the SEC Network, and Vanderbilt will not be home this week. So no rivalry game, no home game, and we will see where this takes us down the road. But again, Robbie reported that Tennessee is having some contact or COVID issues with potential contact tracing, and that is potentially the missing wheel in why all of this needed to happen. Because just looking at it, it doesn't really set anything up for anybody else. You just give Missouri the off week after Arkansas couldn't play, so there may be another spoke to this wheel, and it could be that Tennessee is having some issues. I anticipate if that is the case, we will hear more as the week goes on, but as that news broke here less than 2 hours ago on Monday, we do not know anything more than that. So we will move on, and we will preview whatever game comes up this weekend. As of now, it's Missouri. That will be later on in the week, in this Thanksgiving week. But for now, here on our Monday show, we'll do what we normally do, which is recap Vanderbilt's last game. Commodores fell 38-17 to Florida. Gators ranked 6th in the country. Vanderbilt held their own in this game. The defense did a lot to slow down Kyle Trask. Vanderbilt led in this game both 7-0 and 10-7. Trailed 17-10 at halftime and were tied with a minute to go in the first half before Florida pulled away a little bit, 38-17, in the second half of this ball game. The Commodores scored and did so impressively on their first drive of the day. Chris Pierce got a touchdown for the fourth straight game. Senior wide receiver Chris Pierce, and it seems like the reason he wasn't involved as much, both earlier in his career and earlier this season, wasn't really his problem. It was that he wasn't in sync with his quarterback, and he had just never been given the chance. Pierce was interviewed in the press conference before the Commodores took on Florida. This was now 6 days ago, last Tuesday, November the 17th, and we've heard now on a lot of TV broadcasts from TV announcers who have done interviews with Chris Pierce about how he's really developed his chemistry with Ken Seals. And that's the reason why he's been able to catch a touchdown pass in now 4 straight games. Here's Pierce talking about that new chemistry with the freshman QB, 3 years his younger.
It's me, him, a few other individuals. Coach Jordan Matthews has helped us out a lot. But it's just getting after practice and, you know, saying, going through the game plan that we know is coming up for this week, going over certain routes. It's nothing more than 10, 15 routes, but just toning in so we make sure we're on the same page.
is the type of play or route where that really pays off. The touchdowns you've caught the last 2 weeks where you've gone to the back corner of the end zone, you put it in the perfect spot.
Yeah. So far, actually, each week, every route that I've scored on is something that we've touched after practice. So it's definitely going to be something we keep on doing.
There you go. The hard work paying off for Chris Pierce. And a little shout out to Coach Jordan Matthews, the greatest player in Vanderbilt football history. Now back with the team. I think he is officially an offensive analyst is his title. He's not listed anywhere on the coaching staff, but he's been on the sideline. He's been getting more involved, and hopefully he has a long-term role coaching football at Vanderbilt. So Pierce giving him a little bit of a shout out there, and it's obvious the work that he got with Ken Seals has been paying off. He caught a touchdown for the fourth straight game. He caught two in this game, one of which was the opening drive score, and the second of which was a little bit of AJ Brown style catch and run, fending off dudes left and right for his second touchdown of the game. So Pierce in the game, four catches, 97 yards, two touchdowns, and it was pretty cool after he caught that first touchdown, holding up four fingers on his right hand. That's four. Caught a touchdown in four straight games. And Vanderbilt's receiver numbers in this game looked like what they should look like. They looked like what they should look like every game, with one exception, and we'll get to that in a second. But Cam Johnson in the short game, seven receptions, 93 yards. Amir Abdur-Rahman, combination of the big play guy, a get-to-the-sticks guy, too. Five receptions, 60 yards. This is in order of most receptions, by the way. Then the aforementioned Chris Pierce. Four catches, 97 yards, two touchdowns, a big play in there where they get him the ball and he uses his big body. Ben Bresnahan, the tight end, 3 for 45. Will Shepard lives. We heard some great things about the strong, tall-bodied freshman receiver coming into the season. One catch, his first collegiate reception for 24 yards, and he had to muscle his way to it. Here's how it sounded with Joe and Norman on the Vanderbilt Sports Network.
And just inside 5 minutes left to go. Early movement again there up front. I don't see a flag. Pass down the far sideline. Did he catch that ball? It's at the 11-yard line. I believe he did. That is Will Shepard. Will Shepard went up and took that ball away from the cornerback Marco Wilson. His first catch as a Commodore is a huge one down to the 11.
And we didn't see him much more after that, but they should be using him in that role. They should be using him in that relief-type role. And I thought Shepard made a heck of a play, and you heard it from Joe. He ripped that football away. He's got a basketball background, and it certainly paid off there. And then the running backs is where the disparity happens. Keon Henry Brooks still hurt, did not play in this game. I think it's fair to expect him to be back this week. Now, again, against Missouri, not Tennessee. Missouri is the opponent now for Vanderbilt. For the running backs, Mitchell Pryor had one catch for 8 yards. And he was the passing down back this week, junior walk-on. But they need more from the running backs. But the receiver breakdown was what it should look like. By the way, center Grant Miller had a catch for negative 8 yards on a play that was tipped. He wasn't sure if it was a fumble or a pass. So he did the right thing to catch it. But one reception for negative 8 yards. So that's the outlier. But with the receivers, with the three receivers, Shepard in relief and Bresnahan the tight end, this is what Vanderbilt's receiving numbers should look like every single game. About 40% of the targets, maybe a little less, go to Johnson. Then Abdur-Rahman and Pierce get their share. Abdur-Rahman in the first down game, Pierce in the big play game. Then Bresnahan gets them when they need them, gets the conversions, gets them in the red zone, and then they just need the running backs to be more involved. And they did not get a lot in the run game. Javion Marlow returned from suspension, had his worst yards per carry by far this season, 2.9 yards per touch, 38 yards on 13 carries. Mitchell Pryor had the most touches, if you include the pass, 13 rush attempts and a reception, 44 yards on the ground, 8 yards on the lone catch. And then Rocco Griffin was not used as much as in games past with Marlow back, 5 rushes for 25 yards for the freshman, Rocco Griffin. Derek Mason, after the game, had some not-so-great things to say about a couple of position groups. One of them was the running backs. Here's what Vanderbilt's head coach said in the post-game press conference.
It's always about trying to keep them off balance. I mean, there were some runs there where guys just miss holes, okay? And that's, that. Again, you know, I mean, Keon probably hits those, but you got a group of backs who are still learning. I mean, I thought Mitchell, That's why Mitchell was in there, because at least Mitchell had an idea of where to go with it. And so with that, we left a lot of yards out there in the run game. I mean, our guys are going to go back and look at this film. We left at least 65 to 70 yards of good run, you know, opportunities, which again, puts you in, you know, second and three, second and four. And that's what you need to be in to keep Florida off balance. That's what we had early, and that's really what you got to get to. So with that being said, you know, young quarterback, we're still going to continue to make sure we can keep him upright. And if that's what like we needed to do in the second half, then that's what we needed to do. I know part of it, too, was making sure, man, that from a clock management standpoint, that we weren't putting ourselves in a position where you were getting off the field too fast and putting the defense back on. So, again, you got to look at the game in its totality and understand exactly where you're at to see what you do.
He thought there were some big runs left on the field, and you heard him give the positive feedback to Mitchell Pryor. That means the other two dudes he was dogging, that's Javion Marlow and Rocco Griffin, and he felt like Keon Brooks was going to hit those holes. So with Keon Henry Brooks out, he was not happy with what happened in the run game, and Derek Mason elaborated a little bit more on that previous comment in his post-game radio interview, which you heard on the Vanderbilt Sports Network and locally here on 93.3 FM.
Yeah, I think Keon Henry won. I mean, I think those guys, you know, the other guys that you see between Mitchell, you know, between what you saw with Rocco today and Javion, you know, it's Javion's first game back. So we can say just being back, I mean, he's going to be a little rusty. I thought we missed and left a lot of, you know, run production out there. And I think the run game was solid today, but not like it's normally been. Part of it because, yeah, you know, Keon Henry Brooks runs, you know, well, and he sees it. But I think our guys just missed. Time and time again, I just saw a couple of missed opportunities for some big hits, you know, on some runs that got 2 and 3 yards that should have, you know, been 15, 18-yard runs. But, again, it's about consistency. It's about how much guys played and seen it. And the biggest place where we probably missed, you know, Keon was probably in the pass game. I mean, as you've seen week in and week out, you know, when he's been a vital target for us, like, in the pass game. And I think anytime you have more pass weapons, it makes it that much more difficult for guys to defend.
Two additional thoughts from Derek Mason that were in that second quote that were not in the first one. Again, the second one was from radio. The first one was from the post-game press conference with general media. Thought Javion Marlow was a little bit rusty after he had been suspended for 3 games. He had missed 4. We know he was suspended for 3. We're not sure if the first one was injury, COVID tracing, suspension, or something else. But anyway, he hadn't played in a month and a half. And Derek Mason said he thought he was rusty. And I don't know who that falls on. You know that Keon Henry Brooks is probably not going to play. Marlow comes back. And he's not fully ready to go. In the estimation of his head coach, as you heard after the game, 13 rushes for just 38 yards for a man who had been so great in Vanderbilt's first 2 games as the lead back. So I don't know who that falls on. But that's a severe disappointment in a game where if Vanderbilt were more balanced, this could have been a really competitive game and a potential big upset. Because Vandy hung with Florida. They were only down 7 at halftime. They led after 1. They scored first. They dictated the pace. They were pretty good on defense considering who the other team was. Probably the best offense they're going to play all year. And the defense had one of their better games, which is weird to say when you give up 38 and lose by 3 scores, but it's true. And then the other thing, echoing what I said earlier, Keon Henry Brooks is the missing ingredient in the passing game. Even if he and Marlow were equal, and I think we know this point that Henry Brooks is better between the two options, you want Henry Brooks in there in the pass game because even with Marlow available, Mitchell Pryor is still playing on passing downs. So Henry Brooks, we've seen that, and they need to design more of it if and when he does return, hopefully this week against Missouri. We'll take a break. That's the offensive recap of the day. Come back, talk some defense as Vanderbilt football loses 38-17 to Florida on Saturday. You're anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. You can subscribe to the Anchor Down podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Here on 102.5 The Game. Welcome back. back to the Anchor Down podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name's Max Herz. I'm your host. November 23rd, 2020, if you are listening via your favorite podcast platform or over the air on 102.5 The Game from 8 to 9, which is our weekly over-the-air time slot on Monday nights on 102.5 FM in Nashville, The Game Nashville app, and online at thegamenashville.com. We are back recapping Vanderbilt football's 38-17 loss to Florida on Saturday. And as I said in the first segment, Vanderbilt's defense held up pretty well. Florida didn't run for much. They spread out the love on the ground, and they did well at times with Emory Jones out of the kind of wildcat quarterback run formation. But I thought Vanderbilt did a pretty good job slowing the run throughout the game. Kyle Trask was solid, but he wasn't amazing. 26 of 35, 383 yards and three touchdowns for a man who, as you'll hear in the next segment, Vandy safety Deshaun Jerkins said last week, their goal is to go out and win him the Heisman every single game. That's what an opposing DB saw on film and took away from how good Kyle Trask has been and the way they've been game planning him. So interestingly, I thought Vanderbilt did well, but we'll hear from Derek Mason for the second time today talking about a second position group that he was not happy with. You heard him talk about the running backs in the first segment. Now he's talking about the defensive backs. This was after the loss to Florida on Saturday. Derek Mason talking about his DBs against Kyle Trask.
You know, I think we did some things in terms of some different looks for Trask. I thought he struggled a little more. In the first half of just having clean looks. But when the game really changed, like really for me, was in the 2-minute situation. When you look up and they're going down the field and, you know, like we had one or two opportunities like to make some plays. And then he threw a couple of rainbow balls, man, that I truly believe like should have been picked. I just thought those plays were missed opportunity plays for us. And he did the same thing, coming out. You know, he threw a couple of bloopers, and our guys just couldn't find the ball. And that's just one of those things where, you know, when you miss those opportunities, they extend drives. Okay, man, they put points on the board. And, you know, plays over the top really demoralize you defensively because you're playing good, and then you can get the game stretched out by just explosive plays. And I thought that's what we limited early were the explosive plays.
They did do a good job limiting those explosive plays, but you heard Derek Mason talking about what he called rainbow balls, balls that were high up in the air that he thought his defensive back should have at least knocked down, if not intercepted. The one he's specifically talking about is the touchdown right at the end of the first half. Trevon Grimes caught a 34-yard TD for Florida. That put the Gators ahead for good and broke a tie. That made it 17-10 with 49 seconds left in the second quarter. First of all, that TD probably shouldn't have counted. They reviewed it. It looked like the ball moved when it hit the ground, but the play stood as called and stood as a touchdown. But that ball was up in the air. I mean, that was the rainbow ball. That's textbook rainbow ball from Kyle Trask, and two Vandy players were there. It was Brendan Harris and Alan George. Neither of them could get to the ball or really get to the receiver either. And I think that's the type of play that Derek Mason is really disappointed in. They did limit the explosive plays, but for a defense who now under two separate coordinators has led with the mantra, the ball is everything, they did not really pounce at the opportunity to knock it out of the air against the best quarterback in the conference. And again, Derek Mason in the radio postgame interview, which takes place after the postgame press conference, went back to that same topic and again was not happy with his defensive backs.
Yeah, what you're frustrated more the frustration of the guys is really on knowing and understanding, man, that there was an opportunity, okay, like to get out of that. We weren't in prevent defense. We just wanted him to throw us the football, okay? And the thing that we wanted, okay, is exactly what he gave us. Two times in that series, we had opportunities to go get the football, and we got guys there to go get it, okay? And their guy, Grimes, makes a great play. So, you know, like with that being said, kudos to them. But I thought, Kyle Trask had a good day. I thought, we showed him some looks. I thought he struggled through some of it, but he's still a good enough quarterback to make some plays. But we missed some opportunities on that drive to get ourselves off the field and really squash that thing and go in, you know, really at, you know, 10-10 before half.
There it is, back to that same touchdown, and Derek Mason didn't think Florida should have scored that possession. And it's been very interesting now, after many games this season, but especially the last 2 weeks, to hear Derek Mason just put all the cards on the table schematically and say, hey, this is what we game plan. This is what we expected to happen. This is on a very specific level. I mean, you just heard it there. This was our game plan. We wanted him to throw us the ball. We weren't playing prevent, but we were playing off. And it worked, and we didn't take the ball away. The man is putting all the cards on the table. Whether he thinks that's because he's about to get fired, I don't know. But he's gotten much more detailed schematically this year than he ever has before in post-game interviews. And selfishly, I'll take it because it's very interesting for me to think about it that way. Because when that shutdown's going in, I mean, I'm thinking, hey, Vanderbilt has guys there. There are two Commodore defensive backs there. Is that their ball or... somebody has to have him. And then to hear it in the coach's words just kind of validates what I was maybe thinking and points me in the correct direction as someone who has not coached at the SEC level, obviously. So very interesting stuff to hear from Derek Mason. He was not happy with his running backs. He was not happy with his defensive backs in a game where really the other position groups played pretty well. And there was actually a takeaway for the Vanderbilt defense that did involve two DBs. One of them, we heard about Will Shepard earlier. True freshman making plays, this time on the defensive side. DeRicky Wright, number 30, who came in as a potential two-way player for Vandy, listed as an athlete in high school in his recruiting pages. And he's actually still listed as an athlete on Vanderbilt's roster. We've seen him in games at DB and on some special teams groups, but he got in there and was involved in a big turnover, picking up a fumble that was forced by our guest last week, Deshaun Jerkins, late in the ball game. When Vandy was down 14 and about to go down more.
Trask in the gun. Dumps it near side, pass caught by Kadarius Toney. And the ball is knocked away. Jerkins knocked that ball loose. And the Commodores, I believe, have recovered it. I think that was DeRicky Wright that pounced on that ball at the 23-yard line.
And had the presence of mind to get his feet in.
It was Deshaun Jerkins, I believe, that stripped it. And they list Wright as an athlete by position. He showed it right there. A nifty move to come up with that turnover.
We saw Wright in a couple of defensive looks for Vandy. There were a few times where they went, I guess, I don't think smaller is the right word. They went with five DBs and just went 3-3 up front instead of 3-4. So they took a linebacker out of the game, put an extra DB in. We saw them do that against Mississippi State. We saw them do it again against Florida, and that was a huge play in the game with 12-13 left in the fourth quarter. It was Florida ball at the 22-yard line. I mean, they were about to score again to go up three possessions and ice it. Vanderbilt gets the ball back, converts a fourth down near midfield, Ben Bresnahan on the pick play with Chris Pierce setting the legal pick, and they didn't score on the drive. That's the killer part. That was a drive where Vanderbilt needed to score, but they end up having to punt on a fourth and very long. I mean, there were going to be a field goal in the mid-50s for Pearson Cook. Do you try that, or do you try and pin them deep? What they did, they totally did it. They certified the call. I mean, it paid off. They downed it at the one-yard line. And then Florida goes 99 yards on six plays, and the defensive turnover just goes right out the window. But I thought that showed something for Vandy. I still think Jerkins is the most valuable player on the Vanderbilt defense, and you'll hear from him. If you're listening over the air, you'll hear from him in our next segment. If you're listening on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, you can go back and hear that interview last Thursday with Deshaun Jerkins on the Anchor Down podcast. He's talked about his ball skills both times we've had him on the show, and we saw it there. Toney got a little lax with the football, and Jerkins pretty much already had him wrapped up, had a chance to knock it away, and did it easily. So I was very impressed with that play. But again, Derek Mason not happy with his DBs playing the ball in the air. And it may have cost Vanderbilt a chance to win this game. So Vanderbilt falls 38-17 to Florida. It was 31-17 at the time of the fumble. Florida made it 38-17 with that last touchdown. Kamari Gamble, 30-yard touchdown reception, with Emory Jones replacing Kyle Trask in the ballgame. So Florida puts it on ice there. It'll be Vandy and Mizzou next. Schedule change. No more Tennessee. Now it's Mizzou. 11 a.m. on Saturday. We'll be back. hopefully on Wednesday in this holiday week with our weekly Vanderbilt player interview. So stay tuned for that. If you don't already, you can subscribe to the Anchor Down podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. You've been anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. It's the Anchor Down podcast here on ESPN. 102.5 The Game. We'll be right back.